Roundtable Podcasts, underwritten by Proctors, the Capital Region's premier performing arts center featuring the best in entertainment from Broadway and around the globe. Proctors.org.
Welcome back to the Roundtable. I'm Ian Pickus. Born in Kenya and raised in Toronto, television journalist Ali Velshi is familiar to cable news viewers for his tenure with CNN, where he was chief business correspondent and anchor of CNN International's World Business Today, in addition to several other duties. Velshi was the first on-air hire at Al Jazeera America, where he now hosts Real Money. He also recently made headlines for his interview with Cornell University's president on the costs of higher ed on Talk to Al Jazeera. Ali Velshi, welcome to the Roundtable.
What a pleasure to be with you.
What made you decide to take the job at Al Jazeera America?
Well, I've been an admirer of Al Jazeera's work for some time. I worked for 13 years with CNN and CNN International, and certainly on my work with CNN International, I was encountering Al Jazeera's work as a competitor and was really impressed by it, by its sort of its almost fearful independence and its solid journalism, its in-depth work. So when Al Jazeera came to America, I thought that felt like a good opportunity.
Now, I'm not asking you to put anyone down, but the pregnant pause there is that, was that lacking at your other newsroom?
No, I had a fantastic sort of setup at CNN. I was an anchor, a business anchor for CNN's domestic channel, the one you get in the United States. I was I was a business anchor for a daily show on CNN International. So I actually had a great thing going at CNN. It's got more to do with sort of the evolution of one's career, the ability to spend more time on stories that I was going to get at Al Jazeera versus CNN. CNN, like most news organizations, is evolving and changing. Al Jazeera America is evolving and changing. So it's not a reflection on CNN. It was, there are moments in your life. I mean, it was, I guess it was 12 and a half years for me when I left CNN. I don't think before that I'd been in one job for 2.5 years. So it was definitely one of those opportunities to try something new, get in on the ground floor. The other thing is, I'm a business reporter. So the idea that Al Jazeera America is a bit of a startup was very attractive to me. CNN is a well-oiled machine. It's part of Time Warner, part of Turner Broadcasting. If I wanted to move a desk, I'd have to speak to several people. Around here, I got to Al Jazeera and I didn't have a desk. So, just a different place in one's life, the excitement of being part of a new operation.
At the same time, CNN is a staple. It's on everyone's cable system. It's in the airport. It's a known brand. And I think, as much respect as a lot of people have for what Al Jazeera America is doing, was there any fear in you about, losing a slice of viewership?
It's sort of like going into the witness protection program. That was the fear. Yes, but again, I after 20 some odd years in the business, I think I've probably been on TV enough that I could do with a little while where we get, people refamiliarize themselves with what we are. I certainly had to think about that. I didn't fear it, but I had to think about it. I have been on TV so much for so long. For most of my career, it was 5 days a week, and some days it was 7 days a week anchoring. So I've got a bit of a backlog of time where I could sit it out and I could not be seen by everybody. But yeah, I definitely thought about it. I was surprised that as soon as I left CNN, there was a little gap between when I left CNN and when Al Jazeera went on air. I left CNN sometime in April. Al Jazeera went on air last August. And in between there were a number of very, very big stories that were taking place that I definitely would have been involved in had I still been at CNN. And I worried about how I'd feel when I first saw one of those. The Boston bomber was the first one that happened that I wasn't employed for at CNN. And I was okay. I was enjoying the coverage that others were providing, and I definitely didn't have that feeling like, I got to be in there. I can't believe I'm not there. So I thought that was good. I was worried about what my reaction would be. But I seem to be past the idea that I'm not ubiquitous in everybody's homes now.
Let's talk about criticism of cable news. You're working at a place that for a while in kind of the silly season of American politics was a kind of a pejorative, to say Al Jazeera. I think the work that's being done there is countering that reputation. But also you left a place, CNN, that, is a Daily Show punchline and things. What do you think that the challenges are for cable news and what can it still accomplish?
Well, I think the biggest challenge for cable news is to make people realize that it's relevant, to reestablish its relevance in people's lives. Cable news went from being interesting to entertaining to being a utility without which you couldn't survive. to being subject to the fact that you can get all your news on your phone now. So what is cable news? Some of CNN's competitors got into the business of, you know, reaffirming how people were feeling, whether they're feeling good or bad about politics of the day or their economic or political situation. CNN didn't go down that road. I really think those who did go down that road deserve some responsibility for the polarization that we've got in today's politics. I don't think it's been healthy for our politic and for our discourse in this country. So I'm very pleased to be at Al Jazeera, where we're not fanning those flames. CNN's not fanning those flames either, but it's trying to figure out what it is in the new world. CNN was that utility. It was indispensable to people. So it's got to struggle with what is CNN doing that's indispensable to people? What is Al Jazeera doing that's indispensable? What we're doing is we are trying to be a comprehensive offering of the day's events or current events. And when I say comprehensive, we're arming you with the information you need to be better informed, to make better decisions, whether they're voting decisions or economic decisions or political decisions. We really want to give you as much information as we can on all sides so that you can make better decisions. And to your point, once people watch us, we tend to win converts. So I was never too concerned about the what is Al Jazeera and the unfamiliarity with the name, because I knew that once we had a product on the air, if people were willing to give us 15 or 20 minutes, they were likely to come back to us. There are still some people who won't give us 15 or 20 minutes, and that's fine. You know, Al Jazeera is like soap, right? Everybody already uses some, and a lot of people don't want to change theirs. But if you're looking to change your soap or you're looking to try a new one, you'll go out there and see what's on the market. That's where we come in.
I want to ask you about your specialty in financial reporting. I think you really made a big name for yourself during the financial crisis that began in, this time of year in 2008 or so.
That's right.
Where do you think the economy is today? And more importantly, as a reporter, what do you think the big stories are to be focusing on in financial news?
Well, this is interesting because you mentioned it was right around now in 2008 that it got hot. But in fact, my reporting on it, on the fact that there was danger, started in October of 2007 when we first saw signals that the consumer was weakening and home prices were coming down a little bit. The stock market hit its high toward the end of 2007. And so that's the role. The role is to see this thing coming ahead of time because you stay on top of all of these little indicators that don't amount to much. They don't amount to a hill of beans, but because we were paying attention to them, and I was reporting them at CNN, we were able to let our viewers know that there might be some danger on the horizon. And you got to be careful about that. You can't cry wolf all the time. You can't be doom and gloom all the time. But you have to say, I know my viewer who's busy being a journalist or a dentist or a laborer does not have time to study economic signals and reports, but I do, and I have a staff that does that. And my job on a daily basis is to either protect people from economic danger or provide them with opportunities to prosper. And you know, there's a whole lot less margin for error in that in most people's lives than there was before 2007. So people take that seriously. So where I talk about being a utility, I mean that in a good way. I'd like to think of myself as somebody who you can trust to warn you if something is going to go wrong.
What about the politics of spending? We've paid a lot of attention in this country to debates in Congress, which seem to have really gone along a fault line in terms of, you know, any spending or no spending in recent years. And I wonder what you think, you know, the role of the political discussion we've been having is in how people feel about the economy.
Well, you know, I worked in my younger years. I was a fellow at the U.S. Congress, and I worked for a congressman named Lee Hamilton from Indiana. He was what one would describe as probably a conservative Democrat. Maybe he was a centrist. I don't know what you'd call him. But he was one of a type, and there were lots in that type, people who didn't vote along party lines. They considered every measure that was up for debate, and they considered how it would affect their constituents, but they also realized that they were United States congressmen. He was not just the congressman from the 9th District in Indiana. He had to balance the benefits of his decisions and his votes between the benefit that they would provide his constituents and the benefit that they would provide the country. And that's where I learned about American politics. That's where I learned about the nobility of offering yourself up and being a deliberative member of Congress. That's pretty much gone. As you know, virtually nobody crosses party lines for a vote anymore. Virtually nobody is looking toward these centrists to make decisions. Centrists are seen as weak. I don't think a lot of people follow these debates anymore because they are catering to hardened partisans now. And I think it's very damaging. Now, the good news, and the part that doesn't get reported all that much, is that so much of what Congress doesn't do in terms of infrastructure building and creative approaches and bipartisan stuff is actually getting done at a state and local level. We have a really good, you know, there are some great governors and legislators and mayors around the city who are getting around this country who are getting a lot of things done. But Congress is a little bit hopeless, and it's a little bit disheartening. And I think the sad part is that now people don't even pay attention to those debates because it's a foregone conclusion. We don't tend to have a lot of members of Congress on my show. In fact, we hardly do because it's all foregone conclusions. We know exactly what they're going to say. Everybody can tell you what everybody else's political position is on something. We need to get to a point where people run for office or stay in office to actually make change that might not be entirely palatable to your constituency. But so many things have contributed to this hyper-partisan environment that Congress is becoming less and less relevant to people's lives. The federal government's becoming less and less relevant. And that's why we didn't see the same effect of the government shutdown that we had seen in the last shutdown. It's just people just don't take this that seriously. They don't think they're that connected to their federal government. That's sad to me.
Is there a story or a topic you're working on now at Al Jazeera America that you weren't able to do before at CNN?
Well, there's a genre that I employ here that I wasn't able to do, and that is that I talk to real people first. So the way I look at it, you know, the news, you know, reacts to policymakers and princes and prime ministers and politicians and academics and, you know, the elite, and then we go out and ask regular people what they think about that policy, what they think about the government shutdown, what they think about the increase in taxes or decrease in taxes or things like that. We now, you know, are able to say that regular people control and direct where this economy goes in America. It's their decisions to invest, sell a house, buy a house, change jobs, move, that are really influential. So I try and involve those people in my discussion on air, in some cases ahead of the experts, and let the experts or the policymakers respond to them versus asking people to respond to policymakers. And I think that sort of turns the paradigm on its head and says, we're here for people, and we'd like to know the decisions people are making as a result of the economy. You always know more about the economy based on behavior of Americans than you do waiting for a report on unemployment or housing or whatever the case is. So in my prior life, you couldn't just put regular people on TV. They had to be a victim of something, or they had to have had some achievement. I think we need to sort of honor and glean more information from just plain old Americans, because they're the people who keep our economy running.
Well, you can catch Ali Velshi on Al Jazeera America. He's the host of Real Money and appears on several other programs. It's been a pleasure to ask you some questions here, and good luck with the new venture.
Thank you for inviting me.
And you're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.